Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday, January the 28th, 2026, 1:28:26, 11 and a half minutes past the hour, and I hope you are ready for this hour, because we have a guest joining us who's a good friend of this program. Always glad when he's on, and with everything that's been going on in the country, nobody better to welcome to these microphones than the star and host of the Judge Joe Brown Show for so many years, Judge Joe Brown. Judge, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine, sir. How about yourself? Sounds cold there, by the way.
It zero right now. We're at a warm and toasty zero right now.
Sounds like a good time to bundle up.
Bundle up and listen to the radio program here. Well, Judge, I wanted to talk with you because obviously you are a man involved in law enforcement, and all the talk the last few days has been about 37-year-old Alex Pretty killed in Minnesota by ICE agents. We've all seen the videos from different angles. We've seen the protest. We've seen what the president has said. We've seen what other leaders have said. What do you make of this?
Well, I think we're going to have a nice crisis developing. And what we're getting is those factions that are supporting what actually started off as an effort in California and New York and a few other places from losing several representatives in the House, U.S. House, by 2030, according to what we're seeing with the census predictions. You let more people in these areas, and for the first time in my adult life, the 2020 census, and I imagine also for the 2030 census, we're not going to be asked whether or not we are citizens so that we can be counted toward a number that will keep that representation high. That's not the way things are supposed to work, but it is what's being done, and what is happening is it's violating national security. See, borders are interesting. Most people don't think of it in these terms, but in actuality, our War Department, our Defense Department exists to preserve the integrity of our borders. If you think of France and Germany, for a long time, they shared a common border. So the French army built the Maginot Line, which didn't work, to keep the German army out. And the German army built itself up so they could get in and around the French. But that's essentially what the Air Force, the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Space Force, and the Coast Guard do, is ensure the integrity of our borders to keep them sacrosanct and free from invasion. But when somebody comes across the border is, by legal theory, elastic. It does not just get broken. Think of it as a rubber band around the fence or through the fence line, and when somebody intrudes, that rubber band stretches. So wherever they get found, whether it is by an actual military unit or by a civil agency that's acting on behalf of the defense integrity of the country, it's the same thing. That border is something else, and the rules break down when you're talking about border integrity. In other words, most important is keeping the country safe. There's Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hamas, Iran, North Korea, and other factions that would like to do America a great deal of harm, and they don't have B-52s, B-1s, B-2s, F-22s, F-35s, F-15Es, FA-18 Hornets, a large Navy or whatever, and for 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration, they were allowed to walk freely across the border with backpacks unchecked, unvetted, carrying military-grade explosives and detonators so they did not have to play kamikaze if they wanted to take something out. They could set the explosives, step back, and wait until orders told them to flip the detonators from a considerable and safe distance away. If 911 was bad, what's about to happen in the near future will make it look like child's play. We face a very dangerous situation wherein our national security has been compromised. That is the background for this whole thing. Now, there are statutes, one in particular, 8 United States Codes, Section 1324, which deal with giving assistance, aid, and comfort to illegals, and that becomes a felony to conspire, agree to, or to engage in the practice, and specifically under the code sections in question, official status is no defense. The next thing is 18 U.S.C., that means United States Codes, Section 111, in terms of interfering with agencies or agents who are charged with carrying out these things that deal with national security or the integrity of the defense process of the country. So there are going to be a lot of people that could be subject to some very interesting indictments. And the fact that we have large numbers of American citizens encouraged by elected and appointed officials to go out, violate the law, and impinge and impugn the integrity of the United States of America as a defense situation is horrid. We are going to have some very interesting reactions, I'm sure, when the updated edition of 911 inevitably occurs, and it's going to be horrific for the people who have to bear the brunt of the hatred of these foreign entities. So we have to keep those things in mind. Now, I don't think we're going to have a civil war where some state is going to break off from the Union. And that's been resolved long ago, and the resolution was at the end of the period 1861 to 1865, known as the American Civil War. So what we're likely to have, though, is a very bad situation internally that's going to have to be resolved, and certain people are acting very irresponsibly by trying to cause it to degenerate into overt violence. When you have ICE agents, they have an interesting position. That border integrity does not brook acting peacefully sometimes, because you may have people who have decided to play suicide bomber and strap on explosives. You have people who may be dangerously armed. And we just don't get it these days. What some claim is a carryover from the old civil rights movement, where people peacefully demonstrated in the streets, hoping to provoke law enforcement agencies representing a wrong kind of thing in American history to become lawless is one thing. To go out and deliberately act in a lawless fashion, attempting to provoke violence, is something else. And that came out of the late mid-60s when you got the anti-war movement and a certain militancy and protest that had replaced the peaceful, nonviolent episodes that had continued for decades before that. So with that background, let's have at it and get into it. Any questions?
Yes. So what happened this past weekend with Alex Pretty, 37-year-old, when you see those videos, what do you see happening?
I see confusion. I see a situation where the officers involved have been listening to mainstream media, and they hear otherwise responsible or apparently responsible officials urging violence. One of the interesting things that comes to the fore when you have a civil situation where someone is saying, I had to defend myself, is knowledge or information that leads the actor to understand that the person he or she is confronting has, in fact, displayed violent tendencies or has a violent intention. So you see people out there acting in a recklessly violent situation or a way, and they've been told to do so. So is it reasonable for somebody to say, hey, the people out here have committed themselves to acting violently. I'm trying to enforce the laws of America. Am I in danger? And then you get into this situation where when someone is in a high adrenaline flow circumstance, they don't always act cool, calm, collected like John Wayne or Clint Eastwood in a movie, or John Wick for that matter. So we have some real world situations that are getting out of hand that basically are totally disruptive of public peace, dignity, and order, and somebody's got to bring things back into a peaceful situation, peaceful condition, so that lives and property are not jeopardized by lawless conduct out in the streets.
So if as far as the law goes, was Alex Pretty doing anything illegal?
He was not. It didn't appear. He got caught up and he became a victim of circumstance. But when you have massive lawlessness, the best policy is stay out of the area. The police are unable to, ICE is unable to, federal agencies and agents are unable to put up lines that they can enforce the integrity of and say stay out. So they have to go in and seize people who may be illegal. There are exigent circumstances, and under the theories that deal with border circumstances, it's almost like hot pursuit. Somebody is fleeing and you have to go get them, and the niceties of probable cause, warrants, and such likes kind of go out of the window. So it's a case of, did somebody do something in the presence of another officer? Meaning, is there a call out? Is there a notice out? Is there somebody in law enforcement that observed something? Is it likely that this person, in fact, committed a felony? Or is it likely that there is a high suspicion that somebody did? Is this a person that needs to be taken into custody? You've got a military, quasi-military matter going on here, which is national security is involved. Now, to put this in perspective, let's say that there was information that was indicating that 911 was going to occur, and it was not to be done by aircraft, but on the ground, and law enforcement agencies, New York, Pennsylvania, anywhere, Washington, D.C., had advance notice of this and a likelihood that something along those lines was going to occur. Now, would the public be happier with those things being stopped on the front end or 3,000 some people dying in a Holocaust with the Twin Towers? You see, those are the things that you have to consider.
Well, and I think that's one of the most confusing things that is coming out of the situation in Minnesota, is that immigration, illegal immigration, was absolutely a major issue of the last election, and no doubt that it hurt the Biden-Harris campaign, whoever was running at the time. And at the start of the Trump presidency, he had very favorable numbers, poll numbers, when it came to illegal immigration and things of that nature. Now, those numbers are in the 30th, 40th percentile because of things that have happened with Renee Good, things that have happened with Alex Pretty, things that have happened where people are being drug out of their homes, senior citizens. The look is becoming very, very bad, and turning people against the president and his policies and the agents, such as ICE, because of the optics. And I think the same optics existed during 9/11. Certainly when George W. Bush stood on the rubble after 9/11 with, I believe, the firefighter, and said the people who knocked these buildings over are going to hear from us all very soon. He had a 90% approval rating in this country. But as time went on, and the focus shifted to Afghanistan and Iraq and weapons of mass destruction, by the time he left office, he had a approval rating in the 30th percentile. It's people don't want terrorism. People don't seem to want illegal immigration, but they want it handled in a certain way.
Well, is that really the case? You see, these same prognostications based on polls and supposedly approval ratings are the same groups, same types of polls, and same types of approval ratings that said Kamala Harris was going to whip Donald Trump. That didn't work out, and we saw that that was not accurate. So consider that you may be getting a typical propaganda ploy. Mainstream media has zero credibility now. And the Nazis, a socialist organization, that's what Nazi stands for, National Socialist Workers' Party, that's the German acronym that designates that group, found that if you told a lie long enough and loud enough, you can get anyone to believe it, including the liar. And one of the propaganda tactics is to falsely claim that the opponent that you face is in fact suffering massive disapproval by the people. You see, that's a tactic that's classic. And I don't believe it, because these pollers have been proven to be wrong over and over again, and they have an agenda that they carry out at all cost by, quote, any means necessary, from the 1960s where that phrase came into being. The other thing is, to study this, we need to go all the way back to 1776 to study what we did to get rid of the British influence. We set up the first modern revolution in this country, and we forget it sometimes, and we wonder what the people in foreign places are up to, when we all need to just go back and study our own history and find out what we did. There is an interesting thing that we relied upon, and that is when you have an asymmetric circumstance like we had with the colonies, or like we find right now in the 21st century, when we have foreign adversaries, that if you have a place like ours, a big, powerful nation, after a while, the manpower drain, the resource drain, the strain of actually involving oneself in killing and other kinds of uncomfortable difficulties and circumstances usually causes the population that is resisting these insurgencies to give up. So we don't need to give up, because our national integrity is very much in play. We have a world that hates us. We have several million people who cover this type of situation, who are breaking the law by trespassing in our country with no business being here, and there is no reason to give them any kind of slack except foolishness.
Well, and Judge, I am with you on polls. Clearly, we have seen that polls have been wrong. There is no doubt about that, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But I think the mixed messaging here, if we take polls out of it, is another problem. Is Stephen Miller, big representative for the White House, comes out and calls Pretty an assassin right after his death. And then the White House won't defend it. Levitt in the press room will not defend what he says and won't say if he's going to apologize or not. President Trump did not seem to echo what his press secretary was saying. As she was saying it, he's having a conversation with Governor Walz, in which even Governor Walz said it was a very fruitful and effective conversation. Greg Bovino, who was the head of ICE in Minnesota, is removed within 48 hours of this event, and Tom Holman, the border czar, is brought in. So it seems as if even the administration, who defended the killing right away, seemed to do a 180 on it within 48 hours.
My reaction to that is, from being a young adult when Kent State went down and the National Guard gunned down a number of students on the Ohio State campus, and we got the same kind of reaction from the White House and other authority figures. But we still have this crucial situation that has to be addressed when you have a breakdown of law and order. Now, that's the bottom line to it. The other thing is that the bad circumstance is being very ably handled by President Trump by coming up with some very interesting political theater. It's an act, and I think what's going on is some deals are being cut about liability for prosecution. Remember, 8 U.S.C. 1324 establishes that official capacity is no defense. And I imagine what's going on with the travesty brought about by the Somali involvement in fraud in Minnesota reaches to high places. I know it did here in Tennessee when they had a roundup. They called it the Tennessee Waltz two and a half decades ago, and we have the same kind of corruption now. When you get this widespread corruption, this embezzlement and misappropriation of public funds, it always reaches very high into the ranks of elected and appointed officials from high to low who are taking handoffs under the table. They are misappropriating funds, they're getting kickbacks and bribes, and they're getting a piece of the action. They always do. So I imagine that some deals are being worked out right now about where we are going. In other words, we will give you some slack here in terms of the back-end prosecutions if you do something about cleaning this thing up right now. So we have the specter of the National Guard passing out coffee and donuts instead of marching to keep public order. Now, that, in a way, is something that a lot of people in this country are backing off and saying, wow, that's absurd. Why are you giving these people a reward for acting in such a reprehensible fashion, meaning the citizenry that is creating public disturbance by what they're doing? Not just peaceful demonstration, but actually attempting to interfere with activities taken by American law enforcement officers who are trying to protect this country. It is a really bad situation, but yeah, it's one of those things that is going to lead to some very bad things happening. We had 4 years violence in the streets with George Floyd, et cetera, as an aftermath of that. We had quite a few millions, maybe a few billions of dollars worth of property destroyed in inner city or urban risings, where we had arson and damage done, vandalism, a lot of things, and I think it is very bad what we are facing, which is the culmination of 50 years worth of glorification of dysfunction and legitimizing just outright disorder where effectively you're telling the population it's okay to behave with a childlike tantrum when you don't like something. And somewhere along the lines, that's constipating our whole process, and somebody has got to give a laxative to the impacted parties and an enema, and what comes out is going to smell. It's going to be nasty. But we've got a very bad situation that has been set up that's going to have to be developed and resolved. And it will not be pleasant as it goes down.
Well, and Judge, and I think another thing in this particular situation that has turned people against President Trump, that people who would normally be with him were the comments, and these are paraphrases because I don't have the quotes in front of me, but that you should not bring your firearm to a protest. Preddy obviously had his firearm there. It was removed before he was shot. We've all seen that in the video. But when saying that, that has even turned the Second Amendment and the NRA people against what ICE and the president are doing here. And in Minnesota, it is one of the most laxed places when it comes to the Second Amendment. I believe you can carry your firearm into the state house in Minnesota. So I think that was one of those points where when you say you can't bring your weapon to a protest, there are several examples all over the country where people do. And I think it's a messaging problem.
Well, yeah, that's one of these interesting things that occurs so frequently in America. It's called collateral consequences to exercising a right or a privilege. Let's look at the freeways. You're driving 65, 70, 75 miles an hour on a modern highway in a vehicle that weighs 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 pounds. And a moment's inattention can result in mutilation or death to the driver, the passengers in a vehicle, and others around and about that expressway. But that is a collateral consequence of being able to do something, which is travel at high speed in a motorized vehicle. We can carry firearms, but sometimes in the process of carrying the firearms, there may be collateral consequences such as accidents, negligence. You may have the wrong kind of person who gets a hold of one who is mentally unstable. You may have people who find themselves in circumstances where their lawful carrying gets misconstrued or acted upon improperly. I'm not saying that the law enforcement that we had here acted exclusively properly with what you see in these pictures, but the question is if somebody starts a riot, well, what's going to happen during the course of that riot? Innocent people are going to be hurt. Some people who are very culpable may get hurt. People who just happen to be standing around will get hurt. But one of the main things that needs to be brought into play is if you're out there, don't be out there. If you're trying to protest, it's not the kind of thing to protest where the two factors, those who are trying to be apprehended and those who are trying to do the apprehension or meeting, that's not where you belong. You belong at a distance. If you want to back off and video it, fine, but stay away from the front edge of the conflict. That's just a good policy, but it's collateral damage, and that's one of the consequences of being in a place like America. Being free is dangerous.
Now, Judge, I want to talk specifically about the Preddy case here, because obviously you've been a judge for many, many years. You've decided cases. You've heard cases. In this case alone, was this murder, and I know we don't have the results of any investigation yet, but seeing the video and knowing the situation and what we know, how would you see this in your courtroom?
Well, the way that would work is, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the defendant in this case has acted with the use, allegedly acted with the use of deadly force. When a person is confronted with a search of situation where they feel that they are in jeopardy of suffering death or serious bodily injury, they may use deadly force to defend themselves. Even if they are mistaken as to the circumstances, so long as it is an honest mistake. Now, you have to look at things from the perspective of the actor. What did the actor perceive? Now, people are looking at it with the video, the ubiquitous video that is being produced by cell phones that are always in attendance these days. So we can see things and we can sit back and do an armchair evaluation after the fact. That does not get away from the fact that there are people who have greater or lesser tolerance for being cool, calm, and collected when things hit the fan, so to speak. And that's why combat veterans are so prized in the military, because they have proven an ability to be cool, calm, and collected when it hits the fan. Or they have become inured to it because they have become used to it. For the most part, this is the first time these law enforcement officers have been involved with such things. We don't have standing up to the bully anymore. The teachers, the staff, the parents, the police protect seven-year-olds from each other and arrest them and take them downtown to juvenile detention facilities for getting in a fist fight. So we have a group of adults who have never been in one-on-one or group combat by the time they get old enough to become law enforcement officers or adult citizens. So there is a certain kind of circumstance here that does not generate coolness when it gets hot and heavy, if you get what I'm talking about. So what is going through the minds of the individuals involved? Now, from looking at the video, it looks like the deceased was, in fact, disarmed, but some in the video don't appear to be aware of it or disregarded that or whatever. Now, what happens is a mess. And in order to stop messes from happening, we have to say, okay, are we just going to get down and get mad at Mr. Trump? Or are we going to get mad at those who create the thing in the first place? You set the stage for something happening. It's bad. You have people who want to break the law and go 30, 40 miles an hour over the speed limit with no seatbelt on, something might happen that's not good. So let's look at putting things back together rather than focusing on collateral consequences that are almost inevitable under such circumstances.
Well, and I think just on this specific case, one more thing that has come up a lot in the last few days, and I think it speaks to what you were speaking to there. What did people know? When did they know it? What was going on? Obviously, Mr. Preddy was carrying this weapon, but he did not have it in his hands. Now, the question has come up, were the other ICE officers aware that the firearm had been removed? And a lot of people have said, well, maybe they weren't. Maybe the ICE officer did not say that he had removed the firearm. But if it was concealed, how did they know that he had a firearm to begin with if they didn't see it removed? And furthermore, how many times did they shoot him? I mean, it was several times. Certainly more times than you would need to shoot somebody to kill them, even if you did feel that your life was in imminent danger. And again, okay, I think this becomes a problem.
Okay, let's talk about fundamental reality. The officers were armed with pistols. Pistols are very ineffective when it comes to stopping somebody. Professionals who have been involved in shootings typically ask their associates, do you see anything? Because people sometimes get shot and don't even know it. Now, killing somebody is a lot different than stopping them. I had a case in my courtroom, a murder case, that was interesting because the whole thing was on video and it was obviously an accident. It was negligence that the defendant got found guilty of, criminally negligent homicide. What happened? He got shot right in the middle of the chest with a .45 of 1911 that was loaded with 230 grain federal hydro shock bullets, .45 caliber, deemed probably the most effective round available for a .45 auto at the time. The autopsy report revealed that he got hit dead center in the chest. All four chambers of his heart were destroyed. However, as we see on the video, what happens, he gets shot. He says some comment to the shooter who did it by accident. He says, "You damn fool, you just killed me. Now who's going to support my wife and children?" And he walks about 8 yards to sit down on a motorcycle while he's dead. And he's lambasting this guy and telling him what a fool he is. And then he says, by stopwatch, about 12 seconds after he gets shot, "I can't even see anything, fool. I'm dead. I'm dying." And then at 15 seconds, he faints and slides off of the seat of the motorcycle. So he walked 8 yards after having his heart destroyed. He's dead, but he's not stopped. That's why when people get trained in the use of a pistol for self-defense, they're not told to shoot somebody one time, because people just don't fall over like they do in the movies and on television. They can keep working. If you're a hunter, you may have shot your Bambi, and you know that he might run 25, 30, 40, 50, 150 yards, even though you've destroyed its lungs or its heart system or destroyed an aorta, and the animal is dead, but it doesn't pile up immediately. We know that. Anybody that is in any part of the country and gone out and regularly hunted knows that you usually have to track your animal after you have shot it fatally. And that works with humans, too. People just do not fall over like they do in the movies. So when you see people who are involved in a shooting, a lot of times you ask them when they're new to the business, and there are people that have shot folk in the line of duty one way or the other, or in war, as a matter of fact, and they will tell you that "I shot the man, and it didn't look like anything had happened to him. And I shot him again and nothing happened." So you keep pumping bullets until you get a notice. That's the same thing when knives get used. If you see somebody stabbed once or twice effectively, it's usually somebody that knows what they're doing, because the average stabbing results in 15, 20, 30 stab wounds, because the stabber sees somebody act like they're Superman. "I stabbed him and he didn't do anything, no reaction. I kept going." It's just the fact that humans are pretty resilient, and they may be fatally injured, but they are not stopped. And when they're not stopped, they can certainly keep acting and kill you. Remember, what happens if you completely destroy a person's heart? You've got 10 seconds approximately before they lose vision, and 5 more seconds for a total of 15 before they faint, never to wake up again. I had another murder in my courtroom, which was interesting. The prosecution was against the manager of a store. A crazy man, acknowledged to be crazy, had gone in there and threatened to tear the place up, came back with a gun, and the manager of the store shot him right in the chest. The guy goes, and what happens that was not believed until the jury saw the video, the fool tells himself, he said, "You fool, you got yourself killed. Look at you, dummy." And he pulls his pistol out, a revolver, a .38, and shoots himself in the head. Bam! And you see him slump, and then he revives. He said, "You can't even kill your fool self." So he shoots himself in the head the second time with his .38, and that ends the matter. But the prosecution had assumed that since he got shot in the head twice, the manager must have taken the guy's pistol after he disabled him and shot him in the head twice. But here's the security video showing that the victim shot himself in his own head twice with a .38. See, these things are realities. When you start dealing with what happens, it doesn't match the narrative that you're used to watching your favorite action adventure movie on TV program.
Judge, I want to get to where we go from here in Minnesota and how this is all going to end. But before I do, I guess in your opinion, was this case with Preddy, was this murder? Because that's what people are calling it.
I don't call it murder. It looks to me like justifiable homicide. There was a mistake. But self-defense or use of deadly force cases quite often intersect with mistake of circumstances or overreaction. Human nature. Like I said, everybody is not a John Wayne, not a Clint Eastwood character.
So that being said, apparently last night, Representative Omar in Minnesota was sprayed in the face by somebody at a town hall. She continued to speak. We've had the incident with Preddy. We had the incident with Renee Good. Bovino's out. Conversations are going on between the president and Governor Walz in Minnesota. We've got Holman, the border czar, headed in there. We also, by the way, seven of eight, we could have a government shutdown this weekend. Seven of the eight Democrats who voted to reopen the government last year oppose funding packaging if the Department of Homeland Security is included in it. Where do we go from here?
We have a mess. You see, when you have a government like ours, you assume that the people who are running it or involved in its governance are going to be reasonable, good citizens. That is not always the case. We have the civil equivalent of a Fort Sumter going on right here, and that started the Civil War. I don't think we're going to get that kind of thing, but I think we're going to have a mass system of unrest in our streets, the way the violence is being fanned by certain irresponsible people. Omar has a problem. She has become a multimillionaire on a salary that is a civil servant salary. And some questions need to be asked and some investigations need to be done about where that money came from, husband or otherwise. So that's what I said earlier. When you get a situation like you're seeing develop in Minnesota, there are under-the-table payouts to officials elected and appointed, not all of them, but some of them, that go from high to low, and that's why the fraud, deceit, misappropriation, and embezzlement was taking place in the first place. So it's a real nasty mess, and, you know, when things like this happen, a lot of times people don't want law enforcement or the National Guard acting effectively in an area because it opens them up to exposure.
Is there any good and quick way to get out of this at this point? And do you think we are headed into a government shutdown? Healthcare is still an issue. Now, it does seem as if certain Republicans do want to make a deal this time that did not want to make a deal back in November. But how do you see it? Saturday night's the deadline.
It's extortion. You're looking at a party who is irresponsibly engaging in outright extortion. You see, what's going on right now is the Social Security checks have to come out, and there are a lot of senior citizens that are depending upon those. There are a lot of people who are not getting free medical care like the illegals are, and they have to pay outrageous amounts of money for the Medicare that they do receive. I know, for example, 2 years ago, I had Blue Cross Blue Shield. I had a group plan under SAG-AFTRA, where I was paying $1,673 a year. Now I pay just off of the front end $840-some a month on Medicare and $900 a month for a huge total. That's more each month than I paid all year for Medicare with the backup insurance to cover the uncovered 20% of the Medicare plan. So people are suffering, and they don't want their constituents to, elected officials are sensitive to that, so they're getting extorted by the Democratic Party, who wants to knock out enforcement of the national laws, who wanted, by the way, the two things that were keeping the last shutdown going were because the Republicans wouldn't yield to demands on the Democratic Party to keep providing free medical care for illegals and to pay a subsidy to families of up to four illegals of $5,000 a month. When ordinary people, veterans, American homeless, American down and out, American elderly, and American sick were getting left out literally in the cold. So this is extortion, and we should not see this. We should not tolerate it. And I think it's a place for some grand juries to return some indictments.
Judge, we've got about 3 minutes left. Do you think the government will shut down this weekend?
It might. And if it does, we ought to pay close attention and make sure everybody that is trying to engage in this extortion is punished. Now, I know that when you have a small congressional district, there's no way for the nation to control that district. But the rest of us ought to make it very, very unpopular. And we do constitute the overwhelming majority of the public, not the demonstrations you're seeing out there in the streets. You see, a lot of people don't want theft and death on the city streets, and they support those agencies and agents who stop that, whereas there are others who want to make a big to-do and control the communications, entertainment, and news industries and want you to think that this mass of people who wants public peace, dignity, and order does not exist. So we have to stay the course, and we have to be firm about this thing. It's unfortunate what happened to this law-abiding gentleman, but when you set up a bad situation, sometimes people get caught literally in the crossfire.
Judge, with 30 seconds left to go, we just passed the one-year mark of President Trump's second term. 1 year. Scale of 1 to 10, where do you put him?
9.4.
Judge Joe Brown.
And I say one thing, too. President Trump is the second most highly ridiculed president in American history. You know who the first is? It's Abraham Lincoln. He is receiving right now the same kind of pushback from certain factions that Abraham Lincoln got. And we see where that wound up on a historical basis. Somebody's got to straighten this mess out that has insidiously engulfed our great republic over the last 50 years.
Judge, I would like to say this before we wrap this up. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, and I'm sure about one thing with all these questions up in the air, that if people could have the conversation that you and I just had, and people could listen to it, the country might be a little better off.
Thank you. And by the way, I got permanently suspended from X because they think I'm a robot, and or I've had many complaints, none of which I have received, but somebody doesn't want me to say anything, and I think Mr. Musk needs to do something about getting rid of the algorithms and the bureaucrats that are trying to suppress free speech and free and open discussion of things that the public needs to get into, and we need to get our mainstream media painfully aware that they have an obligation under the First Amendment to do something about spreading accurate information and providing it rather than dealing with being propagandistic machines.
Judge, do you know what, very quickly, do you know what comment got you banned?
No, I don't. They suspended about 1.5 million people that weekend, and I was surprised because I was doing astute political and, detailed political and legal analysis of events. I haven't gotten any complaints. They just suspended
me. Just suspended you. Judge Joe Brown, one of a kind, and certainly gives his opinion. Judge, you're welcome back here anytime, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Have a great day. Stay warm.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Judge Joe Brown, hey, you can't say we don't give both sides here. We'll be back tomorrow. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
As many award Emmys, things like that. Does